all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800. We're very pleased to have on Veterans Radio today Dr. Kathy Haley, a licensed professional counselor, a disabled veteran herself, a former minister, and a certified professional dog trainer. Dr. Haley, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much, Jim. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have somebody on Veterans Radio who is out in the Denver, Colorado area working, as a labor of love as a veteran advocate and in particular for women veterans. Let's start with a little bit of your background. Why don't you tell us what your military service was about?
Well, I came into the service by going through Air Force ROTC out at Loyola Marymount University in Southern California. What I didn't know at the time when I was going through it, that I was in the first graduating class of women veterans out of Air Force ROTC in 1975. And so when I saw that in the paper one day, I thought, wow, I didn't realize that it was such a milestone, but it sort of preceded and was a precedent for some of the harassment that I endured afterwards. From that point, I came out here to Denver, to Lowry Air Force Base, and I was one of the first women to go through the avionics maintenance training, avionics being the communication, navigation, and weapons control systems of airplanes. I was here for 4 months and then went up to Minot Air Force Base to the 5th Fighter Interceptor Squadron, where I was the first female officer in the interceptor squadron. I was up there until 1979, at which point I got out and was medically retired to a certain extent, as much as that could happen when you're considered a reserve officer, because I was diagnosed with a medical problem that couldn't be tracked worldwide, and I could not deploy.
Sure. Certainly back then, if you were not worldwide ready, they mustered you out. And you, as I mentioned in the intro, are a service-disabled veteran. Do you want to tell our audience a little bit about that?
Yes. My disability comes from a couple different areas. The first one being that while I was up in North Dakota, I happened to slip on a step that was written up as a safety hazard, and I ended up falling and cracking the vertebrae in my neck, which caused numerous different problems. But what was interesting was it was looked upon as a female. It was looked upon that I was malingering and that there really wasn't a problem because they couldn't see anything on the x-rays.
Well, the technology at that time wasn't very good, was it?
Right. The second thing that my disability comes from is from post-traumatic stress disorder because of military sexual trauma. While I was going through my training at Lowry, I was assaulted by one of my instructors, and he threatened my career. He threatened me with a knife to my throat, and so I shut up about it for about 40 years. The third thing that I have disability for is I was riding in a military truck, and the driver hit a patch of black ice on the ramp by the airplanes and flipped the truck. And even though the concussion I had at that time was considered to be fairly normal or minor. Because of that, I developed a falling problem. And so every time I fell, I hit my head more. So eventually it got to the point where they rated me at 40% for a traumatic brain injury.
Well, that, again, many of our listeners and those who follow along with Veterans Radio have had disability ratings, or certainly at Legal Help for Veterans, we see this kind of compounding problem all the time. But what we really want to talk about is some of the work that you've been doing for the last, you know, 30-plus years now with veterans. You remain very active in the Denver, Colorado area on Veterans Matters. And the area that we'd like to maybe start with is some of the observations that you've had over time on the VA healthcare inequality as it relates to female veterans compared to the rest of the population.
Oh, I mean, everybody has heard, practically everybody has heard about the disaster we have with the VA hospital in the Denver area, that it was supposed to have been done in 2014, and now they're saying maybe in 2018, and it's billions of dollars over budget. And so because of that disaster at the at the present VA hospital, every time women ask for something, we are told, well, you'll get that in the new hospital. There's sort of this culture that they can't do anything because they can't spend any money on women because it'll all be in the new hospital. So that's the beginning of the inequality. Other inequalities are just having enough female doctors for the female veterans for the longest time. I was not even able to get a primary care physician because all they had for primary care were male doctors, and because of my sexual assault history, I wanted a female doctor. And the female doctors that they did have, for those of us who had service dogs, the doctors said that they were afraid of service dogs, especially one like mine, a German Shepherd, because the doctors came from the Middle East and they didn't want to treat anyone that had a service dog that was a German Shepherd. And so that really limited the amount of primary care physicians that there were for females. I have two other friends that had the same issue.
One of the things that I think has and maybe you can comment on is, you know, over time, when in the 70s when you were in service, there was a dearth of women serving, but now it's about 15% of the military force.
Correct.
Still way below the statistical average, but the numbers are growing. So do you see a increasing pressure for healthcare services for women because the numbers are growing and there's not enough resources, or just simply there's never been enough resources?
There's never been enough resources. When I did my comp and pension hearing down at the VA hospital in Minnesota in 1979, the resources were such that they didn't have enough resources to even make sure that the female veterans at the hospital were safe. There was only one other female veteran at the time at the hospital when I was there, and because they couldn't guarantee our safety, they locked us into a room so the men couldn't get in there. We had to eat in that room because we couldn't go down to the cafeteria because they were afraid of the effect that women would have on the men. It's not just resources. It's the whole culture of the VA that says women are problems. And therefore, instead of changing the culture, we will restrict the women.
So we're talking to Dr. Kathy Haley, who's a veteran advocate in the Denver, Colorado area. Kathy, you mentioned that you have a PTSD rating. I know statistically that about 27% of female vets have a PTSD rating as compared to 11% of the females in the civilian world. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you've seen over time in your area, both on the diagnosis and the treatment for PTSD?
Well, I know I was talking to a female veteran just the other day who has suffered from sexual assault as well as being in combat, and she's getting her care from practitioners at the VA hospital, and she was told that they really didn't know whether or not they could give her a rating of PTSD because of the military sexual trauma, because she didn't have any proof. And I tell you, Jim, the idea of needing proof for military sexual trauma went out about 3 or 4 years ago, according to the regulations, that they didn't have to have a police report for the sexual trauma. All you have to have was a statement from either people who served from you or from friends or family. And so to think that that is still happening, that practitioners are requiring police reports for a diagnosis of PTSD from military sexual trauma, that's really frightening to me.
Yes, you're absolutely right. MST does not require a police report. It can be proved in a whole lot of different ways, including contemporary statements contemporaneously with friends and family and coworkers, as well as we've been able to demonstrate it here at Legal Help for Veterans when we showed that somebody who was a star performer for the last year or 6 months, what have you, all of a sudden their work performance drops off like crazy right at the time that they have indicated they've been assaulted. So that is very strong circumstantial evidence to prove up the existence of the MST. So it's disheartening to hear that medical practitioners are still out in the field saying the opposite.
Correct. And just the availability of resources for women. I go to the vet center for my mental health care, and they are always running men's groups for PTSD, and they try to say that the women should be part of the men's group. Well, you know how well that went over with the women. But they are finally going to start doing just women's only PTSD MST groups, but not until after the first of the year.
Again, do you think it's, Kathy, because they just are tone deaf on this issue, or they don't have the resources, or it's a competing priority issue? What as an advocate in the Denver, Colorado area, what are you finding as being the excuse, I suppose?
The excuse is always that they don't have enough people. We used to have two psychiatrists at the vet center, and then all of a sudden the VA decided that they were no longer going to pay contract psychiatrists, even though the gentleman who they decided not to pay anymore was a VA retiree that had worked in the hospital. And so now all of the people that were going to the vet center seeing the psychiatrist there are down to having to switch over to just seeing one doctor, which means we're seeing psychiatrists like every 4 to 6 months. And for the women to suddenly, snatch away, a trusted figure that had been in their life, and it wasn't the vet center's issue. It came from the VA. There is no sense of any sorts of sensibility as far as what their decisions do to women's mental health when they suddenly decide to switch people. And I realize that when you go to a military hospital, that people are always being deployed, et cetera, but it's really hard when you're only seeing doctors once and twice a year to suddenly have those taken away from you.
Well, and we know that MST is severely underreported in the active duty military. Every report acknowledges this. It's not even a question if it's underreported, but it still seems like VA is not particularly accepting this as a legitimate harm. I'm wondering if that your contemporaries and colleagues are using more choice, going out and seeing a private doctor, getting authorized to see a private doctor, if you can only see a psychiatrist from the VA once a year.
It is almost impossible to get a choice recommendation for mental health in the Denver area. When my mental health practitioner retired, she was the only MST person at the vet center and at the hospital. In fact, she was one of, I think, two in the whole western state area. And she retired, this was back in 2011. And I told them that they were going to just transfer me to a male therapist. And I told them that wasn't, you know, possible. So for the next 2 years, they saw me as an unneeded basis with the head of the vet center, but they could not find, and I even had to be the one searching for doctors. They could not find a therapist who was willing to take what the VA was paying.
Well, if you design your pay program so low, of course people are going to say it's not worth my time. I find that a little shocking that they haven't solved this problem. Where does it stand today?
Well, we have some people now, some therapists at the vet center. I'm not sure about the hospital, because the vet center here in Denver is really the one that is publicized as for boots on the ground and for MST. And so the majority of the women come down to the vet center. But even though we have some good therapists there, and we have two female therapists there, they still have not undergone the training that makes them MST specialists. They just have to be really good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I know you've been involved with the Department of Colorado and part of its Female Veterans Action Committee. Can you talk about whether or not you're seeing at the state level a push that's going to help solve some of these health issues for female veterans?
We're working on it. Between pushing for female veterans and pushing for service dog issues, I have been invited over the past 3 to 4 years of testifying in front of a number of state committees for the state legislature, as well as visiting with our state senators in order to make sure that female veterans and veterans with service dogs are given their due as far as what their needs are. And one of the biggest things we do is just the American Legion post that I am a part of. It's an all-female American Legion post that was raised up in 1955 by World War II nurses and mechanics. And we go around and we give workshops for female veterans all over the state, telling them what their benefits are and helping them to file claims for those benefits, as well as to push for the medical care that they should be afforded. And one of the biggest things that we are finding is that older veterans like myself, Vietnam era veterans, who probably at this point in their lives have lost their spouse or their partner and are by themselves, is that there is no part of the VA that really cares for geriatric female veterans who need help with things like nutrition or depression caused from loneliness, because everything is, all of the groups and all of the programs seem to push towards the male veterans, you know, go out on a hunting trip with them, go out on a fishing trip with them, and not dealing with any of the needs of older female veterans.
No, that's a very good point. And I think one of the things your advocacy does is make sure both at the VA and at the state and the federal level that when people say, well, I want to help veterans, they think about the entire spectrum of men and women who have served this country and who need, have already earned it, certain benefits and may need to have those resources available. You've mentioned service dogs. I want to get there before we find ourselves out of time. Tell us a little bit about your enthusiasm and advocacy and use of service dogs.
Well, I'm a very big advocate for service dogs because I myself have one. I'm on my second service dog. Her name is Arkeo, A-R-K-E-O, and she is a German Shepherd dog. And I have her
She's doing a little on-air panting and whining in the background for those of you who can hear it.
She wants
to go out and play.
She wants to play ball. She has decided that whenever I'm on the phone, that is the time for us to play ball because I must be able to multitask.
Yes.
But
so
how many
years have you had a service dog?
How many years have I had a service dog? Since about 2004 was when I got my first service dog, and Arkeo is 7 years old, 7.5 years old. So I got her she was born in 2009, and I have her primarily for PTSD. So you know, when she had to have surgery, I told the veterinarian, I said, you realize that if Arkeo doesn't leave the house, neither do I. You know, and that is so true for so many of the veterans. And because I'm a professional dog trainer, I help veterans find service dogs and train service dogs because there are just not enough programs that put out enough service dogs for the number of veterans that need service dogs.
And talk about the value of a service dog to somebody in your situation and other veterans in general.
Well, we have one veteran that I was working with that when he first came, I worked with a program that started with the military order of the Purple Heart. But when he first came to interview, when we were deciding if we were going to place a puppy with him, he could hardly complete a sentence. He couldn't even talk to us because his hypervigilance was so bad. He couldn't drive anymore because of the PTSD that he had from being over in Iraq. And once he has had his puppy, he's had his puppy now for about 9 months. And the other day, he's living south of Denver, about an hour and a half south of Denver. He had to come up for a training session, and his wife was sick, and he was able to drive himself.
Well, and that's a simple little step, but it's a huge step for him, isn't it?
It's a huge step for him being able to regain his independence, to be able to function better, in other aspects of his life, as you know, if he wanted to even try to go back to some sort of volunteer work, to get together with his buddies, just to get out of the house. I mean, before I got Arkeo, I was going shopping at the grocery store at 2 o'clock in the morning because I didn't want to encounter any other people.
Well, I think your story here, Kathy Haley, to other veterans and friends and family of veterans has been informative. I think it also highlights the need for everybody to be an advocate, as you are, for veterans, because there's a whole spectrum of veterans out there. And some of the comments you've made on geriatric care by the VA. In hundreds of these interviews, I haven't heard anybody raise that issue yet. So I think, again, it's a good example of everybody brings their own perspective to these issues and can advocate based on those perspectives. I congratulate you on what you're doing.
Well, thank you. You know, everybody's got a story to tell. And when they try to make service dogs have to be nationally certified or nationally trained. I told them, I said, a 250-pound paratrooper doesn't need the same type of a service dog and the task that he does for them as, you know, a 110-pound cook or clerk that suffers from PTSD also. I said, so you can't have just one cookie-cutter certification. You have to listen to everybody's story and figure out what that veteran needs.
Well, I want to thank Dr. Kathy Haley, a veteran advocate from the Denver, Colorado area, for being on Veterans Radio today. I want to thank all of you for listening in to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. Until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.